everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. Thank you for joining me today. This is such a great opportunity to keep getting educated, keep getting empowered. I like to say it's really important to have this knowledge so you can make informed decisions regarding your health and well-being. And I'm so glad you're joining me for another opportunity to have an in-depth conversation on what women must know. I also want to welcome all my new listeners and invite you to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, and that's also my Facebook page, where you can like me over there because I am continually posting information, studies, articles, recipes. You know, it's really about just giving you the knowledge, and from there you'll be so much more informed. And in this world, we really need to get truthful information or else we're in trouble. So that's what this show is dedicated to do. And to help you on this journey of getting empowered with truthful information, I have a fantastic guest today who is going to really be enlightening us on, an issue that is just so important to understand and has such far-reaching consequences. So first of all, let me introduce my guest. He is Dr. Joel Furman. He is a board-certified family physician and nutritional researcher who specializes in preventing and reversing diseases through nutritional and natural methods. Dr. Furman is the research director of the National Research Foundation, and he is the best-selling author of several books, including the New York Times bestseller Eat to Live, Super Immunity, Eat to Live Cookbook, and The End of Dieting and the End of Diabetes. And his latest book, which is what we're going to be exploring today, is The Fast Food Genocide, How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. So we have a really important conversation that's happening this hour, and it's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Joel Furman to the show. So hello, Dr. Furman.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for the wonderful work that you are doing on your mission. And this topic of fast foods, we have lots to go through, but, you know, we have really, the United States has embarked upon this whole, demented model of eating and food that has spread throughout the world with dire circumstances. And I always have believed that our food industry has a lot to reckon with in the end, because they are just destroying our health. And I know this is a passion of yours, so let's just jump in and talk about what made you write this book about the fast food genocide, which is a really powerful title, by the way. Definitely makes you pay attention.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize what's going on, and they, for them, the title "Fast Food Genocide" seems shocking, an exaggeration, too extreme. But I think once they realize what is actually happening and how the processed foods, the junk food, the candy, the chips, the soda, and the fast food, it's not just creating an epidemic of diabetes and stroke and obesity and cancer. It's also creating autism and mental illness. And one in every, one out of five Americans now have mental illness, and the episode of depression and anxiety and insomnia and learning disabilities and allergies and attention deficit disorders. And what I'm saying is that the destruction to our society is so profound and the tentacles go so deep that people only are seeing the very tip of the iceberg in which food is destroying the future of the human race. These processed foods are destroying our future. And therefore, the term fast food genocide, we could talk about why that title is apropos, but I think it is a wake-up call. And it is and at the same time, it's a wake-up call to saying we're destroying our health, we're destroying our certain vulnerable populations, and our populations are being wiped out with terrific, horrible things happening to them. And also, we're destroying our genetic future, so that future generations are going to be even worse off health-wise because of the effect of fast food and processed foods on the human genome. So it's very serious topic. And I'm excited to delve into it today with you in a little more detail.
Great. So let me just start by asking you, how did we get here? How did we arrive in the 21st century with a diet that is predominantly fast food or processed foods? What went wrong?
Wow, that is a really tough question because, as you can imagine, there's so many hundred things working in conjunction with each other. It started back, it started after the Civil War, you could say, in the, and then we had the white supremacy movement and the violence in the South driving black Americans north to occupy urban areas in the inner cities. And right after the Civil War, and the reason I'm bringing this up right now is because you said, how did all this happen? And it's happened, and there was a disease called pellagra back then in the 1860s that lasted till about 1920 that was denied by medical authorities that it had anything to do with nutrition. It's a disease predominantly of niacin deficiency because the diet back then was predominantly corn, molasses, and pork and very little vegetables. And pellagra was more prevalent in the white communities because it gave you a red neck, causing the medical term was a causal necklace, a red net around your neck, and it caused people to be more violent and homicidal and suicidal. And the medical authorities called it a genetic defect, and they thought that there was these genetic defects in the in communities in the South, which was totally untrue. It was definitely a nutritional disorder, and then we denied it was a nutritional disorder. It's just like we denied cigarette smoking for many years. We denied lead was an issue causing problems in society until we got the lead out of gasoline. Nobody admitted lead was causing learning disabilities and cancer and things like that in lead gasoline. But smoking was deemed to be nothing wrong with that either. But this was initially the disease called pellagra. They finally find it being cured by people eating more vegetables and being nutritionally. And it took them 60 years to finally admit it was a nutritional problem and not a genetic issue. And we're seeing the same thing today because after, with the world wars, our U.S. government invented and produced processed foods like Spam and Twinkies and instant coffee and Tang and all these, and we started to make chips and we started to put more processed food into the diet because they were produced during war to help people, help them have food that would travel with them and be on the battlefield and not get bad. And then those foods spurred a food industry. And it actually, the pharmaceutical industry started to take off around the 19th century too. And that food industry and that and the pharmaceutical industry kind of worked together to make believe, again, that most of these diseases can be solved by pharmaceutical means. And they were predominantly nutritional deficiencies. And we started fortifying food back then in the 1920s and 1930s, adding the niacin back to food that we were taking out and processing so people wouldn't get pellagra. And then we started fortifying food to make it so people wouldn't get clinically sick. They wouldn't be apparently sick from the processed food with a lack of nutrients. We just put enough food, enough vitamins and minerals into processed foods so people weren't clinically getting scurvy and getting pellagra and getting other diseases of frank nutritional deficiency. But now the deficiencies became more subtle, with degrees of brain damage, loss of intelligence, increased propensity for violence, increased propensity for drug use. And then, of course, the food manufacturers used nutritional science and food science to make the foods very attractive, very addicting, so you can't stop eating them. And then the rush of calories into the bloodstream, the fact that these foods can be accessed fast, digested so quickly, and flood the bloodstream with calories so rapidly means they were able to design the foods to stimulate dopamine in the brain like drugs can. And now we have people with a major, ubiquitously, we have food addiction across society today where people crave these foods, they can't stop eating them, how overweight they get, they still want to eat the food, their hunger is shut down, and now they're driven by their food addiction drives, which they think are hunger because they try to stop eating these foods and they feel fatigue and they feel shaky and anxiety, and they think that reducing fatigue is and getting rid of the shakiness and the stomach cramping and the headache, and they think that's relieving hunger. They actually, people now in today's society, think that the withdrawal symptoms from a toxic diet is actually hunger, and it now derails their instinctual hunger and makes them chronically overconsume calories or need to overconsume calories just to feel half okay. So it's very complicated factors that work all in conjunction with each other. But whether it's the history of how this developed and how the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry became an industry of supplying people with toxins to reduce symptoms instead of developing a medical industry that looked to remove the cause of disease and having people live in a manner to avoid getting sick. You know, we wouldn't have to have any heart attacks today. We wouldn't have to have any strokes if people ate healthy enough to remove the cause. We could pretty much wipe out cancer right now if we taught people how to live a healthy life. But the medical profession developed down a different path. They developed an expertise, and rather than motivating and educating people how to prevent disease, they morphed into a pharmaceutical-related kind of profession where now we're giving people poisons to lessen the symptoms of disease while we let the cause of these disease continue, so we still have a very sickly population, and now we treat those symptoms with drugs. So instead of removing disease, we're controlling it and spending money to make it, you know, to make it not affect us as much, I guess. So, and the overall effect is it doesn't work. Because we can talk about that, but whether we're talking about breast cancer, heart attacks, strokes, you know, whatever we're autoimmune, whatever we're talking about, we can mention how essentially how drugs fail to a degree and keep us, you know, in prison and sickly our whole lives, as opposed to freeing us to getting totally well, which could have happened had we removed the cause. So it's a very complicated, obviously, the complicated answer to a very complicated question,
yeah,
which was almost impossible to answer in a short period of time in this manner, you know.
No, you did a great job. I think it, you know, really creates an overview that, you know, we have to step back because we're so immersed in our culture and supermarkets and gas stations and convenience stores. And, I mean, everything is just woven into our daily reality that we sometimes don't have a perspective, which is what we're doing here. It's like stepping back and looking at the horrific statistics on the health of Americans and any culture that chooses to move into a, you know, fast food diet, and also understanding that the food that we are eating and generally craving has been designed to keep us a prisoner of our cravings, our urges, with detrimental consequences, because we don't even think of ourselves as an addict, but we are. If you're eating fast foods and processed foods to some degree or other, you're an addict. It's affecting
you're an addict.
It's taking
that's
you
right,
over, right?
That's right. You're an addict. If you're over, you know, we can say that the health authorities proclaim that 66% of Americans are overweight. If you're overweight, you're an addict. You know, because if you weren't, because if you're eating the amount of calories you need, you would be a normal weight, and you wouldn't have heart, you know, you wouldn't be at risk. And being overweight is significantly increasing your risk of death and destroying your brain, and also increasing your risk of brain dysfunction and developing depression and other mental illnesses. But one thing I have to say is that even though medical authorities consider 70% now, actually moved up to 70% as being overweight, that's not accurate because they're considering, they're using a BMI of 25. I'm sorry, they're using a BMI of above 25 to define a person as being overweight or obese. And all long-lived societies, all societies essentially free of heart attack and cancer, all blue zones where people are the most centenarians, people living to 100 years old, are all societies whose BMIs are below 23. And so a BMI of 24 and 24 and a half and 23 and a half and 25 are all not a favorable, are overweight. So when we use that BMI to be what's really favorable, then we would classify about 88% of Americans to be overweight. And out of the 12% that are normal weight, a lot of those people smoke cigarettes or drug addicts or have autoimmune conditions or depression or digestive disorders or occult cancers. Or, in other words, there's a reason why they're a lot of those people are normal weight because they're sickly. But the point I'm making right now is that a similar point you made a minute ago is that people have accepted this as being normal. They believe that they've taken the accepted the myth that heart disease is just the inevitable consequence of aging. These cancers are genetic. That's aging, genetic. It's normal to get sick. It's normal to go to doctors and take medications for high blood pressure and high cholesterol. It's normal to get cancer and get mammograms and colonoscopies and prostate exams. And it's normal to get demented and we take the drugs for dementia. They see these things as just the consequence of living, and they don't recognize that these diseases that are plaguing us, that are destroying us, are completely and entirely avoidable, and that modern nutritional science has made such significant advances so you don't have to have any of these things happen to you if you don't want to. You just have to eat differently than other Americans eat. And we've also accepted the myth that drugs are the answer to these problems, and that drugs significantly protect us, extend our life, and make our lives better, and are saving us. And we're going to give billions of dollars to, you know, to for the pink ribbons or to for breast cancer, and that's going to solve a magic pill that's going to wipe out breast cancer someday, which is utterly ridiculous. That's like looking for a magic pill to like to wipe out lung cancer while everybody still smokes three packs a day. You know, we can wipe out lung cancer if people stop smoking, and we can wipe out breast cancer if people start eating healthy, but there's no way you're going to wipe out lung cancer with a magic pill if people are still smoking three packs a day, or no way we're going to wipe out breast cancer with a magic pill if people are still eating processed foods, junk foods, candy, sweets, and barbecue and fried foods and all these foods that cause cancer. It's just completely ridiculous. So what I'm saying is that the conventional norm, the way people think in society today, has been so colored by the history of the food industry and the drug industry and the way and what the media has portrayed and what we've learned to accept as being, how should you say, just we've accepted these things as truths. It's like the religion. This religion in modern America today is belief in the medical profession, and that's our answer for everything that ails us. More medical care, more access to medical care, and if you have a dollar to get to a good doctor, all your problems are taken care of. You know, it's totally. Obviously, we're both physicians, but I just think that this has been. And we don't want to. You know, we still want to, of course, respect the fact that doctors do valuable things for people, and especially medical emergencies. But the issue here is these. But what's killing Americans? Autism, you know, learning disabilities, childhood cancers, adult cancers. You know, then deterioration of the body, so you can't enjoy your later life. People in nursing homes who can't take care of themselves, and an explosion of diabetes. These are things that in America, that the medical profession is hopeless to solve because they're not getting to the cause.
Right, not getting to the cause, and that's it. So. When we, you know, so let me just say that so many of my colleagues, as well as people who are really concerned about their health and are trying to eat right and trying to convince their family members and friends, get frustrated. And what often comes up in conversations is, what is it that people don't understand about how they're eating and the choices they're making and their impact on their health? So that goes on and over again. It's like, why can't people see? But I think that you said something earlier that helped to explain why people stay on a diet that's causing illness and causing nutritional deficiencies in their body, and that's the addictive component of fast foods and processed foods. Would you think that's the primary reason why people get so hooked on these foods?
Yes, I think that your addictions, both emotional addiction and physical addiction, and brain stimulation and decreasing dopamine sensitivity, in other words, you become dopamine insensitive looking for more stimulation, I think it leads to a relationship with food, to use food for pleasure like we use drugs, and that living for the pleasure food gives you. And of course, I'm saying that pleasure keeps you in prison. And it deadens your sensitivity, so now you can't enjoy the flavor of natural foods because you've overstimulated your pleasure sensations, which made them more insensitive. And now you can't even taste the sweetness of a strawberry. It's not even that sweet anymore. And the saltiness and the flavors in an avocado or a piece of lettuce is not even flavorful anymore because you've deadened your taste. So you have to seek out more concentrated sources of artificial flavor because regular flavors are not strong enough for you to get pleasure from anymore. And that, so yes, this addictive component that drives the behavior, feeds cravings, and then makes you so uncomfortable if you don't feed those cravings, not only keeps people overweight and sickly, but it increases their propensity to become an addict in other ways, a drug addict now, an alcoholic. It drives them to become an alcoholic, or it drives them to become an opiate addict, or even a drug addict who's now criminalized or put in a prison. And more than half the people in federal prison today, by the way, are there because of nonviolent drug-related offenses. We're talking about a prison system encompassing millions of people who are in, you know, who are in for decades put behind bars for their for these drug-related offenses, which were essentially contributed to or stimulated by their, by starting to eat candy and processed foods and other damaging, addictive, dangerous foods early in life. And we have so many people that live for that. They live for their food. They live for their restaurant meals. They live for their alcohol. They live for their smoking. They live for their snorting. They live for their drugs. They just look live for the when they can make money to get to, they can stimulate their bodies to get some artificial chemicalized pleasure. And essentially, they've put themselves in a prison because now the more you're addicted and the more you live for those stimulatory sensations of pleasure, whether it's alcohol or opiates or food or sugar, or fried foods, or high, the caloric rush from eating a high-caloric meal, or candy, or whatever it is. The more you live for that, the more you've deadened down your ability to think clearly, logically, creatively, and of course you've increased your risk of developing depression, and now you've created a fog of mental, not just mental, a mental fog, but also a diminishing of emotions, excitement about life, positivity, and your ability to be happy. So you've created a cloud of negative emotions from these addictions, which prevent the, which, you know, this is why we're saying that there's such a strong relationship between fast food and depression, whereas studies show that even two servings of commercial baked goods or fast foods a week are linked to depression. But what I'm saying right now is that even people that are not clinically depressed with a diagnosis like major depression from fast food, even those people who are addicted to food across America that are overeating food all the time and can't stop eating their cookies and their cakes and their candies and their fried foods and their burgers and their pizza, even those people have a negative emotional state that's no longer, that's not a normal brain. The brain is not functioning normally. They may not have be depressed, but they certainly don't have the ability to think creatively and intelligently with as much happiness and excitement about life. In other words, it deadens your excitement about life even when you're not clinically depressed.
Gosh, you just think about how many people have no reference point of what it is to feel, you know, energized and focused and happy just because they are consuming on a daily basis foods that are altering their neurological functioning, their physiological functioning, and, you know, they don't know what it is to be something else, you know, and it's like an awakening when people begin to change their diet and make other choices. So I want to ask you this. So when we talk about fast foods and processed foods, I'd like you to go in and let's dissect these foods. What is it about the components of these foods that have an effect on our physical, emotional, psychological well-being, and what they look like? So, you know, when we talk about fast foods or processed foods, we can start with like the oils, the fats that are found in them, and we can kind of go through so people understand what it is they're getting when they're eating a fast food or a processed food meal. Maybe we need to make a definition between fast food and processed foods, and then we can go into the components of these foods and what those components are actually, what kind of impact they are having on our health.
Right, and that's exactly what it is. So first of all, when I use the term fast food, I'm not referring to food only found at a fast food restaurant. I'm referring to any food that's packaged, chips, soda, candy, cookies, you know, all the junk food people buy in a convenience store, and the processed foods, cold breakfast cereals made, you know, made with high amounts of sugar, Cocoa Puffs, and, you know, Fruit Loops, and all the junk people are eating that think these things are food, and they're really frankenfoods. They're not food. They're chemically fabricated, and they're artificial. There's no significant micronutrient load. There's no, you know, there's no significant phytochemicals, antioxidants, micronutrients. So I'm talking about a fast food is any food that's highly refined or highly processed or fried with a high sugar content. And also, there are certain characteristics. They're calorically dense. They're very high in calories, and they're very low in nutrients. They don't contain a significant load of micronutrients like vitamins, minerals, and naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, phytochemicals. They can add some artificial and chemicalized vitamins and minerals, but that doesn't behave like regular exposure to nutrients do, because when we get the nutrients in a natural food, it's accompanied by thousands of other accessory phytochemicals that humans need. But in any case, so it's colored, it's concentrated, it's heavily flavored, there's usually a lot of sweeteners in it, and there's salt, usually salt and sweeteners, usually both. It usually has artificial ingredients and chemical ingredients as preservatives, as colorings, as flavoring agents, and it's absorbed into the bloodstream. You can access it quickly. You can open that. You can prepare it quickly by just putting it right in your mouth with no preparation or work to do so, and it's accessed into the bloodstream quickly. The amount of calories that can enter the blood happen very rapidly. In other words, if I ate a cup of beans, 200 calories of beans, because the bean is so high in these slowly digestible starches and resistant starches, the bean calories would enter the bloodstream slowly over a three-hour period. And that wouldn't require much insulin production by the body because you're only having a little bit of calories entering a little bit at a time. The body would burn it for energy. If I ate a walnut or a sesame seed, because the sterols and stanols and the fibers would bind fat, they would release their fat slowly over hours. The body could burn it for energy. You get a few calories coming in every minute. It would take, 3 hours to digest that food. The calories would gradually come in over a 3 to 4 hour period. But now I eat this pizza, or I have these chips, or I have a soda, or I have some chocolate cake, or I have oil, something fried food with oil in it, and the calories flood the bloodstream, where the 200 calories now of white bread come into the body within 5 to 7 minutes, not, 3 hours. We're talking about, so all the 200 calories enter the bloodstream at once. That's sugar. And white bread is the same as sugar because the calories are broken down to predominantly glucose in the bloodstream, came in real quickly. The body sees the high level of glucose spurting into the blood, and it has to secrete a huge amount of insulin to respond to that. And insulin is a fat storage hormone. It revs up fat storage. It promotes angiogenesis, which means the growth of blood vessels to grow the fat. And it's a hormone of cellular replication, which now promotes tumors and cells to replicate. And when you're no longer growing, those replicating cells are going to become abnormal tumors and even cancers. So insulin is an excess amount of insulin makes you overweight, and the excess amount of insulin produced by the pancreas over time eventually leads to the pancreas' inability to secrete as much insulin as it needed to produce the demands from the fat body and the eating these highly glycemic carbohydrates, so you become diabetic and overweight. But the point I'm making is that whether it's oil or whether it's sugar, it's that these, or whether it's cheese, for example, is that the calories, a lot of calories into the bloodstream quickly. And it's the caloric concentration that enters the bloodstream so rapidly that makes the dopamine signals in the brain be stimulated, leading to people to crave to reproduce that sensation of stimulation of caloric concentration. So calorically concentrated foods are physiologically stimulating to the brain or addicting. And in nature, you wouldn't get calories that easy. You couldn't get that many calories that fast into the bloodstream. And then, of course, as you know, they contain artificial flavorings and ingredients and other things. And when you mix, when you mix oil in a food, it makes people want to consume more calories. And oil, they say, goes from your lips to your hips within 5 minutes flat. And the oil is when you eat a nut like sesame seeds, it goes into the oil in 2 hours. But you take sesame oil, it goes in the bloodstream in 2 minutes. You take, almonds, it enters the bloodstream in 3 hours. It takes almond oil into the bloodstream in 3 minutes. The point is it enters the bloodstream so rapidly, revs up fat storage hormones, signals the brain, makes you into an addict, and it doesn't turn down the appetite. It doesn't tell you to stop eating food because you still want to eat more calories, even though you just took in 300 calories of oil, because there's no fiber, there's no bulk, and there's no micronutrients associated with that oil. So you have the same appetite as if you hadn't taken in those 300 calories. If you walked into a buffet at we were serving, and I gave you an apple as you were waiting in line, you decrease the amount of food you consumed in the buffet by about 65 calories to make up for the apple. But if I gave you a tablespoon of olive oil when you walked into on the line of the buffet, you would still consume the same amount of calories if you hadn't had the oil, because there's no reduction of the appetite from the consumption of oil, because there's no bulk, fiber, nutrients that control appetite. So what I'm saying right now is that when we take an animal, like a monkey, and we put a lot of sugar and salt and oil in their food and white flour, high glycemic carbohydrates, we can make this monkey become obese. we can make them stop eating natural foods and longer eat fruits and vegetables. They'll just eat the processed foods because the natural foods can't duplicate the caloric rush into the bloodstream. The natural foods can't duplicate the sugar concentration and how rapidly it's absorbed. And the natural foods can't duplicate the concentration of fat and oil in the food to stimulate the brain. So the animal will stop eating natural foods and just eat the processed foods until it kills, until it commits suicide with all, by ruining its health and dies young. And we don't even need these animals to prove this anymore, to make them become obese or to make them, you know, food scientists have discovered how to make people overeat food and how to make people want to come back and eat their products over again to sell them. But now we don't even need to use the rats and the animals anymore because we have the people all becoming overweight and obese and diabetic and coming back to fast food restaurants and drinking soda. You know, it's like, how could people not know French fries and pizza and soda and burgers or grilled burgers are not bad for them? People know they're bad for them, but their brain is no longer going to think logically about that. They're going to cause too much cognitive dissonance with their addiction. So the body has to push those thoughts out of the brain, not think of the dangers and just think of the pleasure, and then look for excuses or rationalizations why it's okay to eat that way. Like saying, oh, well, you know, I'd rather die younger and just enjoy my life more and get more pleasure. You know what I mean? So it's all kinds of things like that that just, you know, you have all kinds of rationalizations that addicts will make to continue their food addiction. But in any case, just like drug addicts do, smokers do the same thing. But these are complicated subjects, the way that excess salt has been mined and how we've made artificial sweeteners and we've made concentrated sugars and honey and maple syrup. And even people think of guava nectar and honey and maple syrup, they think that's healthy for them. They don't even recognize that if it floods the body with a lot of glucose, it's going to have a heightened insulin response. And the oil, they think they've been told that coconut oil and olive oil are good for them. Even though they're 120 calories a tablespoon, they think it's healthful to put oil on your foods. You know, because they don't understand the difference that how the concentration of calories come into the bloodstream, leading for people to eat more food and become overweight. If people were thin and working 8 hours a day behind a plow, you know, digging in the fields for all meaning calories, maybe that those foods might be somewhat okay. But with our present society of everybody being overweight, there's no way people can be healthy eating so many concentrated calories into the bloodstream so rapidly.
Well, so when we talk about fast foods, we're talking about processed foods, which you can get in. You can get processed foods in Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and Natural Grocer, right? I mean, they're still on the shelf. They're processed in some way, even though you're going into a food store you think is going to have healthy food. You have to really be aware and discerning.
That's right. It's full of chips and junk food, and you can get things made with less sugar. But you can also get things made with more sugar there if you want to. But, you know, one thing, the highlight of, I think, one of the dangers of fast food is you wouldn't see in one of those stores is you wouldn't see, like, French fries cooked in oil where the oil's been cooked for, like, sitting there in a deep fryer.
Right.
I don't think so anyway. And the food's been cooked in that same oil over and over again because I don't think people recognize that that's so carcinogenic that is. Because they think, oh, moderation, have French fries or potato chips once a week, it's not going to kill you. But that's not what the studies show, because even working in a fast food restaurant, breathing, inhaling the carcinogenic smoke from the oil cooker increases your risk of cancer. It's so dangerous. And even one serving a week of commercial French fries is linked to more than a 25% increased risk of prostate or breast cancer, for example. So we're talking about even occasional use. It's so carcinogenic to use these foods that even occasional use is linked to cancer. So really scary. And people are eating this food every day. They're eating French fries and, you know, fried onion rings and fried, what do they eat, those fried squid or whatever. I don't know whatever it is, but people fry
the calamari.
Calamari. Calamari. And look at the South. We have so many people eating fried foods in the South, and you call it the stroke belt, you know. And here's the thing. In areas of the country where you have more overweight diabetic people, in proportion to the level of overweightness and diabetes, you also have more crime and more violence and more murders and more suicides and more mental illness. That there's a link between the same foods that cause overweight and diabetes and the foods that cause brain dysfunction and criminality and propensity for drug use. So you can't really separate that. So what I'm saying here, let me just make this clear. I'm saying the link between fast food and candy and junk food and crime and drug use is better than the link between poverty and crime and drug use. It's better than the link between not having parents or having lack of parenting or bad parenting. It's the closest link with almost any parameter that you can study is what is the negativity of these nutritionless, dangerous foods people are eating. And also, we're talking about not only is it causing brain dysfunction, loss of intelligence, inability to succeed in school, and propensity for drug abuse and drug use. Not only all those things, but it also is damaging the genes that's passed on to future generations, leading to an explosion in autism, learning disabilities, propensity for diabetes, obesity, and cancer, and brain tumors and childhood cancers that occur. And we're not blaming these diseases on what the children are eating because it's so much affected by what the parents ate. So when you're eating yourself into bad health, if you haven't given birth to all your children yet, you're damaging your eggs and your sperm. You're damaging the cells in your body, and you're weakening the genetic code of future generations. And so really the term fast food genocide leads to the damage of our genetic code, making fast food damaging future generations in a very exponential way. And also the fact that populations in urban centers where they can't get access to produce and get phytochemicals and antioxidants to protect the brain have these food deserts where we're depriving them of the opportunity to achieve for human achievement, to realize the American dream, to get the education, to get out of poverty, to increase, to have a good life for themselves and their family. They're perpetuating an unhappy life, and it's blamed on these people in a way that makes us bigots and racists to a degree. It's because we're blaming it on people's skin color and not on the lack of food access. And if we plot these parameters of intellectual achievement, economic achievement, or any parameter, or health, or even looking at the rate of diabetes, we could say, because we learned in medical school, that look at this, how black Americans have higher rates of obesity and diabetes, as if their genes are weaker, which is totally not true, because it's not based on skin color. If we plot the amount of junk food people are eating and the availability of healthy food in the person's environment where they're raised, you can show that the same rate of disease is present in any colored skin population. It's not to do with the color of your skin at all. And a matter of fact, if we go back in history to the 1860s to 1880s, you know, from the 1860s to 1900s, when after the black Americans were freed, they had more centenarians, more people living to be 100, better health, longer life than white Southern Americans. It wasn't that because they had access to vegetables and beans and other healthy foods that people aren't getting access to today. So I'm making another meaning of this term fast food genocide, is that we're destroying populations of people, removing their opportunity for having a normal, good, happy life because we're not having enabling food access. And to me, it seems like as Americans, we're so much a part of our culture is and should be this idea of equality and opportunity for all, and we're taking away opportunity if we don't have equal food opportunity, food availability, and the knowledge of how fast food is destroying our brains and our children and our ability to succeed in life and dumbing down our intelligence. Unless this information is really well known, it's going to become very hard for us to fix this problem.
Oh, yes, actually, yeah, sorry, I'm here.
I got nervous. I thought I lost you.
No. So, I'm taking a breath from everything you've just been sharing with us. There's a lot going on. So I have two quick questions, and then I want you to share some of your success stories, because I know you have some great success stories with your patients. But I have two questions.
Sure.
They're kind of linked together. First of all, is there anything on the shelves that look healthy that we have believed to be healthy but are stealth processed or junk foods that we should know about?
Well, you know, in everything I'm saying, I'm also saying here that white flour products is very similar to eating sugar, you know, to eating something like a piece of candy or a candy corn or a marshmallow, because the bloodstream doesn't view it any differently. And people think, you know, pizza and bagels and white bread, and they're eating sandwiches of white bread all the time. It's feeding candy.
But let me ask you this.
High glycemic, you know.
Here's what I want to ask you. Protein bars. Talk about what are the things that are sold that we think are health foods but may not be? So let's talk about things like protein bars or these high density Luna bars, and what are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, I think there's worse things people can be eating. Certainly, I don't think the concentrated proteins, and these are, and they're usually sweeteners in there, like agave nectar and sweeteners, the first few ingredients. I mean, obviously, if a person's buying a bar, they should look at to see. Maybe it's just there are some bars sweetened only with fruit or only with dates. But I don't think taking isolated soy protein is a good thing, or whey protein is a good thing. Those things drive up IGF-1. Remember I said earlier about the oil flooding into the bloodstream, the sugar flooding into the bloodstream? Well, protein flooding into the bloodstream from cheeses and animal products, and especially when you concentrate those proteins in the form of whey or isolated soy protein, it floods the bloodstream too quickly with protein, raising up IGF-1, which is a growth hormone that promotes cellular replication, which is going to promote cancer. And, you know, and by the way, the World Health Organization has classified barbecued meats and processed meats like hot dogs and pastrami and bacon, and, of course, barbecued and grilled meats that you get in a fast food restaurant, in the same class, class 1 carcinogen, in the same class as asbestos or cigarette smoking. So, you know, and the World Health Organization has classified even the potassium bromate they use as a preservative and lightener into white bread as a class 2 carcinogen. So we're talking about people consuming carcinogenic substances all the time, but because it's socially acceptable, everybody's doing it, it's okay. So I guess you can find a healthier bar, but there's also most people are eating candy bars and junk food bars, and they eat by taste and they eat by pleasure, and they, you know, and they don't, and you know, and people are thinking to themselves listening to me talk, and they're thinking, you know, oh well, I just, that's so radical, I'm not going to eat all that healthy stuff, I'd rather just enjoy my life more and die younger or take the chance or something like that. But they don't realize that they're not – the other thing is they're not enjoying their life more because their taste is deadened by these things. And that you, it does take time to regenerate the taste back, the taste power back in your taste buds. But people who live healthfully and learn to make healthy ice cream out of frozen bananas with macadamia nuts and real vanilla bean powder, or make a chocolate cake with real cocoa and, you know, with really natural cocoa sweetened with a date instead of all the sugar, or making a Thai, you know. In other words, what I'm saying is that those of us, and my mission to teach people how healthy and fun healthy eating can be and how protective it is, we're not taking away pleasure in life. We're actually enhancing the pleasure of eating, and we get great health in the you know, as the result. So I just want to, address this common thought that even though it's you can live and eat healthier, who wants to live like that? Because you're living with deprivation and you're not enjoying your life is totally untrue, and it's another delusional message the brain tells you when you're a food addict. It tells you, well, I'm not going to be happy that way, and I'll never be enjoying life anymore, and I'd rather just drink and smoke and snort and do all the things I have to do to live, but to be healthy and to be happy, and even if it's not taking risks with my health. And it's just not true that you're enjoying your life more and you're enjoying your food more when you get back when you eat healthy, not less. It just takes a while to learn and to retrain the taste buds.
Right. So I want you to talk about your successes, but before I go there, one quick question. What would be the very first step a person that you recommend a person does who is interested in starting to make that shift and eat more natural, wholesome foods? So someone who's been an addict and has, you know, gobbled down the burgers and fries and the ice cream and is ready. What would be the first step they could take?
Well, to make the withdrawal from junk food and to increase their propensity, you know, for success here, the first thing they do is to eat high nutrient foods. So when they cut down or cut out the junk, they don't feel as sick. We want to flood the body with nutrients. So the first thing they want them to do is two things. One is have a big salad, like a chopped salad or a big salad once a day as a main dish, and throw into it like the red onion and the, you know, and the tomato and the healthy greens like arugula, watercress on top of lettuce, and you know, throw some nuts and seeds on top, you know, or even if you better yet, use a nut and seed based dressing. Start to eat at least that one healthy meal, a big salad a day, and then on the weekend, make a giant bowl of vegetable bean soup with mushrooms in there and vegetable juices and vegetable, no salt vegetable broth, and take that big pot of soup and put it out into like 8 different containers. You can take it to lunch with you, so you can have this either a chili or a pot of vegetable bean soup with all these greens and beans and onions and mushrooms and carrots and, you know, things in there, and peas and red beans and all these things in the soup. So then if people have a salad and soup and a piece of fruit for lunch every day, then they can start, at least they get their lunches out of the way as being super healthy, and they start to flood their body with nutrients. That's the first step. and make lunch is the meal that people are generally out of the house, most likely to be out of the house, and be tempted by eating processed foods and by eating candy at work or cookies or other fast foods. So having that giant salad, the nice bowl of vegetable bean soup and some fresh fruit is the first step to make really clean up your lunch. The next step after that would be to eat a simple breakfast, you know, maybe having oats with flax seeds and chia seeds and berries and, you know, in other words, really make it a super healthy breakfast where you're having the bean, the berries and the seeds and something like steel-cut oats as opposed to a flake. Get rid of the flaked and the cold cereals that are just junk, the junk food sweetened flaked cereals with no nutritional value. Get rid of that next.
Okay. So those are some great tips, and I mean, look, it's obvious you've got some wonderful recipes and suggestions in your book, and you've got tons of really wonderful sounding, luscious sounding recipes so people can start to learn how to make some things, and you know, the recipes all over the place if people really want to do that. Let's inspire people today, because I want you to talk about some of your successes with your patients and let people know what's possible if they start to make this shift to really love themselves, look after themselves, and understand how important it is to fill their cells with true nutrition and not toxic substances, which aren't even foods, really.
Right, exactly. And, you know, obviously I'm very grateful to have had the opportunities I've had, you know, especially on my PBS television shows where I've actually been able to reach millions of people across America. And the fact that I've, you know, just want to say, the fact that I've, have, you know, have best-selling books that have hit millions of people, it's just the amount of success stories I get sent to me and the letters of gratitude, not just from patients but also from doctors. Doctors who had health problems themselves and doctors who are utilizing these methods in their practices, have changed their medical practices around, and it's just been so incredibly rewarding, personally rewarding, to have this opportunity to, you know, I've been so lucky to be able to do that. So, but you know, we can talk about some individual cases, but, you know, we're talking about people. I've got a guy who lost 220 pounds in 1 year. You know, but I have thousands of people who lost 100 pounds in 1 year, thousands lost 100 pounds in 1 year and keep it off and get rid of their diabetes and their heart disease. People who have told me they had angioplasty or have had angioplasty and still in pain again with scar tissue from the result of the angioplasty are still able to open up the blood vessels, lower the blood pressure, get off the blood pressure medications. And we're talking about getting rid of headaches and autoimmune diseases. And some of the greatest, most satisfying stories, the people with lupus. Well, one girl was on the national renal transplant list with a creatinine of 4.2 waiting for a new kidney. And her lupus went away completely, and her creatinine went down to 0.8, which is normal kidney function. Back to having a normal life again without lupus, saving her life. No kidney transplant, no disease, no drugs that cause cancer for the rest of her life. She's well again. Or people with psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis. So many people I showed on my pictures on the television show of people with psoriasis all over their body, who now, as a result of healthy eating on a nutritarian diet, and these people have been in bed for 20 years in pain with joint aches and horrible skin rashes and now having a full and exciting life again with no disease, you know, being able to climb mountains and play volleyball and play tennis. I remember I was at one of our getaways with one of my former patients, who's now longer a patient because she's just well and happy and doesn't need medical care anymore. And she climbed the top, her name was Jody, she climbed the top of the mountain and she put up her hands in the air and she said, "Look, I'm a medical miracle. I couldn't hardly walk and now I'm climbing mountains." You know, and she without her psoriatic arthritis and psoriasis. And I said, you know, it's not a miracle. It's just when you, that nutritional excellence, it just unleashes the natural self-healing powers that are already inherent in all of us. And it just shows us what the bad food was doing to you. And that people are looking at these diseases as being genetic or they're just because they're so prevalent, and you go to a doctor, and a doctor says nothing to do with nutrition. He never mentions nutrition. He just gives you a drug that causes cancer and has you take that drug for the rest of your life. And that's where rheumatology or rheumatologist, you have to need this specialty because these drugs are so dangerous. They got to monitor people on these drugs to make sure they're not going to cause any major problems with these medications. But nobody's telling these people they can make a total recovery. So some of these most exciting things are these patients who think they're going to need these medications the rest of their life. They're going to stay with autoimmune hepatitis, rheumatoid arthritis, ulcerative colitis, psoriasis or psoriatic arthritis. They think they're going to be sick the rest of their life. They're told they're going to be sick the rest of their life, or with lupus or scleroderma or Sjogren syndromes or, you know, even, you know, so we're talking about people just thinking they can't get well. And that's my message, is that don't give up. Whether if you have high blood pressure, you want to protect yourself from a heart attack, get rid of the high blood pressure. Don't just take drugs for it the rest of your life. You have diabetes, type 2 diabetes, get rid of it. Become non-diabetic. You know, you can do so. You know, that's so. In other words, I want to motivate people to let them know that they don't have to be complacent and satisfied just getting medical care and drugs for the rest of their life. If they want to, they can really strive to get totally well, and in most cases you can get totally well, and it's worth it. It's worth the effort.
You know, this reminds me of the story I read a while back about what happened in Appleton, Wisconsin. You probably know that experience where they did an experiment in the school, and the school was for the worst offending students that were unmanageable. And they sent them to this one school, so they obviously had poor grades, they were angry, getting into fights, they were violent. And in that school, they took away all the junk food, all the processed food, and they served them only real food, you know, vegetables and fruits and nothing processed, nothing fried. And what happened to that school was nothing short of miraculous, because the behaviors changed. These kids who were failing became top students, and it was an absolute transformation in every single one of those students in that school. It was a huge success. And, you know, I don't know what's happened to that program. I trust it's continuing on. But it really demonstrated everything you're talking about, Dr. Verman, what is possible if we put real food back into our bodies and how it transforms every aspect of our life.
That's right. I'm familiar with that study. And we also are doing studies and testing with people who are already in prison on their ability to go out of prison and develop a good life for themselves and prevent recidivism and crime and criminal behavior in the future. And even in nutrition has a tremendous role to play and is very effective on that as well. And it's just... So this has the tentacles reach deep into all facets of our society. And as we talk about a healthcare crisis and trying to improve our economy and give businesses, you know, how they're going to pay for all the health, all the medical care people need, it's impossible to solve that issue because we have so many people sick, and we have a growing number of an increasing number of people who are sick with their brains destroyed and with their bodies destroyed from food, that the only way to solve it is to really teach our population how to be healthier, and having a healthier population with less need for medical care. We already have, you know, too much, how much we say medical care is too much a big part of our environment. We have just too many medical tragedies and sick people around suffering, too many suffering people. It just doesn't have to happen.
So in the minute or so we have left, Dr. Verman, what would you like to wrap this conversation up with?
Wow. Well, I want people to, you know, to have hope, to that they can be happier, they can be healthier. I want them to recognize that we have an unprecedented opportunity in human history. It's the first time in human history we can get frozen berries in the wintertime. We can eat greens all year round. In other words, we can live longer and happier without being stuck in a nursing home, without being demented, without dying in a hospital. We have such tremendous power to control our health destiny, but that power is all about self-care. And not medical care. We have to. It's what you do in your own home, in your own kitchen, in your own life, and the power comes from you educating yourself, learning, and applying these modern principles of nutritional excellence. So this is a message of hope and happiness, and how we can have a great life with a great long and happy life. And I'm just hoping and wishing the best for everybody listening, and seeing if we can work together. If we can actually work together and support people that are in worse situations to have a better life, we can really solve so many of the problems we have in this country, including so much division and so much racial divide.
You're cutting out there, Dr. Yeah. Verman, so I'm not sure what's happening with your line.
Oh, okay.
But
maybe I'm
but
moving around
just,
and I'm talking.
Yeah, so let me just let people know that your book is The Fast Food Genocide, Dr. Furman's book, Dr. Joel Verman, Fast Food Genocide, How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. It's a fantastic book. Be sure to read it, share it with friends, you know, family who really need to get this message. And visit Dr. Furman on his website, which is Dr. Furman, and let me spell that. It's FUHRMAN.com, drfurman.com, to get more information, pick up some of his other fantastic books that provide you with solutions to end diabetes and other chronic illnesses, support your immune system. This is really the purpose and the passion of Dr. Furman's life. And Dr. Furman, you're still listening. I just want to thank you for the great difference you're making in so many millions of people's lives. And I just really honor the passion that you are out there with in the world and spreading a really important message to empower all of us to make better choices so we can truly live a healthy, happy life. And I just wish you all the best in your work.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me on today. And same to you and all your listeners.
Thank you. And to all of you listening, thank you for joining me for another opportunity to get empowered with truthful information. I'll be back next week, as always. And until then, let me remind you to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.